No region of the country has ever quite captured the imagination of Americans like the West. Free and independent cowboys rode the range during the last half of the 19th century, herding cattle and then heading off into the sunset. All the cowboy had, or so the story goes, was his hat, his horse, and his six-gun. But he had something else, music, which few people appreciate more than Douglas B. Green, also known as Ranger Doug, a founding member of the musical group Riders in the Sky. Green has written a book about cowboy music called Singing in the Saddle, The History of the Singing Cowboy. He says cowboy music combined elements of many other styles.
From the popular music of the day, from the Irish and Scottish music, from vaudeville, from the blues, from Mexican music, just anything that happened to be there. They took it, and it was this wonderful amalgam, and that was all amped up. Some of it was pretty schlocky, sure, but some of it was absolutely unforgettable.
Drifting along with a tumbling tumbleweed.
Did it have a life in the recording industry before movies?
It did. It wasn't a strong life, but it was. You could see the pulse building. I think as early as about 1925, Vernon Dalhart started recording cowboy songs, and he was the first guy to make a dent in country music, as we know, with the Prisoner's Song.
And Jimmy Rogers was yodeling.
Jimmy Rogers began yodeling shortly thereafter, and he recorded six or seven cowboy tunes and wrote cowboy yodels in his career, and his yodeling started a whole generation from then on that Ray Whitley, Roy Rogers, Elton Britt, the great yodelers of just a few years later, all, you know, is all because Jimmy Rogers was there.
When the talkies came in, well, it was perfect for Hollywood, wasn't it? Because they were out west anyway.
It was perfect, and the Western was a proven moneymaker in the film history. In fact, the first Western filmed with sound was a singing Western. It wasn't what you'd call a formulaic singing cowboy picture like the Gene Autry and Roy Rogers, but the first one featured the Cisco Kid. It was called An Old Arizona, and he sang two or three songs in it.
Gene was certainly the model for how to make a living at this.
He certainly was, and he just had a magic touch on screen, on record, and everything he did with money just seemed to work for him.
I'm back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend.
Well, I guess every studio had to have its cowboys.
And every studio in the 30s had to have its cowboy, that's right. I think only MGM, who probably thought that Nelson Eddy did the trick in his Mountie pictures, didn't. But every other studio developed one. And some, as we point out, there's, of course, Roy Rogers and Tex Ritter. And,
of course, Roy Rogers came out of the Sons of the Pioneers.
He did. My heroes. They were so interesting to me because they were just a bunch of guys from all over the country who'd kind of come to Hollywood just hoping to get into movies, get into show business. And they all were so talented. And they wrote these brilliant songs. They were very sophisticated songs. And yet these were just guys, you know, they were from middle class or working class backgrounds. These weren't trained musicians. And yet they wrote some of the most stirring melodies of the 20th century and memorable songs, Cool Water and Tumbling Tumbleweeds particularly. But
Cool Water, I mean, that's an opera.
Uh-huh.
It's so sad.
It's the first song I remember hearing as a kid about the West that stuck with me from, you know, pre-reading and writing days. But I could just see the mirage, you know, and hear the call, water, water.
But it was Leonard Sly that came out of the Sons.
He did. I guess he had ambitions beyond being the top Western Harmony group in the country, which they were at the time, but he tried out at Universal when they went to make a singing cowboy series, and he lost out. He was too skinny, too young-looking on screen. So they got Bob Baker and made a number of pretty good Westerns with Bob Baker.
Was he Roy Rogers yet?
No, he was still Len Sly then.
I see. Well, that's all it took.
And
change your name.
And he became, you know, one of the most beloved people in the history of our national popular culture.
The shadows sway and seem to say, tonight we'll pray for water, cool water.
About Tex Ritter.
I always had a very fond spot for Tex. I thought, as a kid, he was so authentic. I came to realize what a love and genuine respect for the tradition he had. With Tex, I mean, he really cared about where the cowboy songs came from. He cared about the folklore of it. He was a peach, and we lost him way too young.
Do not forsake me, oh my darling. You made that promise as a bride.
TV helped, of course, in the development. I mean, you got to see all the old movies and some new shows that, of course, Gene had a series, Roy had a series.
Right. The whole TV generation brought a whole new bunch of us who spent our Saturday mornings gathered around the glowing box and then went to the matinee in the afternoon and watched the same pictures.
But then it all sort of faded into the sunset.
It really did. I think every fad has its day. Things come and things go, and the singing cowboy was hot for a while, and then it wasn't. By the early 50s, it was just about over.
But then your group, Riders in the Sky, brought it back.
Well, I hope we had something to do with that. I really do. When we began in 1977, it was the current version of the Sons of the Pioneers and us, just about. I hope we created a consciousness out there that this music was still, it wasn't nostalgia, it wasn't just part of the past, it was a living American tradition and still going on. And here, 25 years later, we just celebrated our 25th anniversary. 25 years later, it is still going on.
Douglas B. Green is the author of Singing in the Saddle, The History of the Singing Cowboy. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards.